Welcome to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. I am your host, Ben Trueblood. With me is John Paul Basham.
Yo.
I was wondering if you were going to mix it up this week.
Nope.
We're 44 episodes in to the podcast, and it's a yo every time.
Yeah.
There's something
to be said for tradition.
I agree. Tradition is good, which is why this episode is focused on a holiday for some that happens next week called Halloween. The title of this episode is Boo for Halloween.
Boo.
You see, the great thing about that is that you can take it to mean two things. It's a double meaning. It can be like, boo,
boo,
or it can mean boo.
I get it.
Either way, whatever your church believes about Halloween can be supported by the title of this podcast.
So we just named your event for you.
That's right.
So probably going to have one.
So this week's podcast, we're going to talk about Halloween and how you navigate Halloween as a student ministry, some ways that you can use Halloween as an outreach event, some things to remember. Here's the reality, there are a lot of churches out there who avoid Halloween and have an evil view of Halloween. And if you're in that, then you need to know the culture of your area, the culture of your church. This isn't one of those things that you really want to rock the boat on just to make a stance. Like if you believe in candy and going door to door, but your church culture is like, no, we don't. Probably not a good idea for you to push the button on this issue.
Not worth it.
It's really not worth it. But before we get into this podcast, which I know is going to be super exciting to you, this podcast comes with a free package of candy corns to all the listeners, which would be awesome if there was a way that we could deliver on that. But before we get into it, head on over to iTunes. Leave a positive rating and review in anticipation of the greatest Boo for Halloween episode that you've ever heard. Hit that subscribe button while you're there so that you can have this podcast delivered to you without you having to navigate anywhere every single week.
I just want to say candy corn.
Candy corn.
Carn.
Carn. John Paul, do you know the history of Halloween? I think that's a good place for us to start.
Man, no, I don't.
Halloween has a deep history. And in order to explain this deep history, we're going to go to Wikipedia. Because as Michael Scott says, Wikipedia is the best thing ever. Anyone in the world can write anything they want about any subject, so you know you're getting the best information possible.
If it's out there, it's true.
If it's out there, it's true. We're really not going to go to Wikipedia right now, but I had to find a way to get a Michael Scott quote in there. So we did. But Halloween is thought to have originated with the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain, or Sohain, or Sahain, or I don't know how to say that word. I'm not Celtic. The ancient Celtic festival of Samhain, which is what we're going to go with today, when people would light bonfires and wear costumes to ward off roaming ghosts. So that's kind of where it started, that at least many people believe that's where it started. The evening before was known as All Hallows Eve. So that's actually Halloween, the 31st. So Samhain would be November 1st. All Hallows Eve would be the 31st, which later became known as Halloween. And it evolved into a secular community-based event characterized by child-friendly activities such as trick-or-treating. So there you go. That's the history in a nutshell. But I think the reason why a lot of people tie it to the evil side of things is because the Celtic tradition, they would light crops on fire in the bonfires, and they would sacrifice animals, and they would do all of these things to kind of ward off the ghosts, because they believed that the barrier, the veil, the what separated the dead from the living was at its thinnest point during this day. And so they didn't want them coming across.
Allowing the dead potentially to return.
I mean, you don't want that.
No.
So in their belief system, they would sacrifice animals and crops to their deities in order to ward that off. And there are a lot of other things. This isn't a history podcast, so we're not going to go super deep into the history of Halloween. But you get the idea, all right? Now, there are some other things that happened on Halloween. October 31st happens to also be Reformation Day. It's the religious holiday where Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door of the church, and it started the Reformation, essentially. So that's an important day for us.
Maybe we could just change it and everybody dress up like Martin Luther.
Which would be awesome. It's like Friar Tuck from Robin Hood. If you've ever seen Robin Hood and Friar Tuck and a picture of Martin Luther, it's basically Friar Tuck but with hair.
And a tool belt to carry the hammer, because that would get heavy.
and the nail, which I guess you don't need a tool belt to carry a nail.
No.
So we could all say Happy Reformation Day instead of Halloween. And so here's a suggestion for you. If you're in your neighborhood and kids are coming to the door, when they say trick or treat, you could say Happy Reformation Day. That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's festive.
Yeah, people will just stare at you.
I was trying to shorten it, but it gets dangerous when you short it and turns into
Happy Reefer Day.
Right.
which you don't want.
Which is... Yeah, another thing to avoid in student ministry.
That's April 20th, right? And we don't want to celebrate that day. So let's get into the meat of the podcast here, because some of you you're like, okay, I'm about to turn this thing off. But here's the deal. Ask yourself this question as you're sitting in your car or in your office or running down the street. Do you celebrate Halloween? Yes or no? Do you have something next week in your student ministry that uses Halloween as a way to have an event, build some excitement, have an outreach type of event, or is your church against Halloween and the celebration of Halloween altogether? Some churches have an event, you know, like a fall festival, some type of themed event where kids can still come and do the trick-or-treat thing, but it's inside the church. Chances are your church already has a view of Halloween, and it might be, like we mentioned at the very top of the episode, it might be different than yours. So before we get into how to handle Halloween in your role as a student pastor, you're going to need to know the culture of your church and the culture of your area surrounding Halloween. And again, like we mentioned, this is not the issue. This is not the hill to die on. This is not the battle to fight against. If you believe differently, just go about your thing, and if you want to trick-or-treat as a family, awesome. But if your church is against having a celebration, then it's not a good time for you to celebrate it as a student ministry.
Yeah, so right behind that is the question, why? So if you have it, then we've talked about this on numerous occasions, always asking the question, why am I doing this? Why am I having this event? What's the purpose? All that. But on the flip side, too, I think it's so it is not worth an argument, but it is worth asking the question, why do we not have it?
Yeah.
Because there could be some misconceptions of what a student ministry is trying to accomplish in having that. It may not be that there's necessarily a stance against Halloween in general, but maybe there's some bad history that this happened on Halloween and this was very much against what we stand for. And a change in strategy or a strategy at all to begin with, for that to be an outreach event would be something acceptable in the church and beneficial to the student ministry and families, a good alternative. What, you know, there's a bunch of ways that that can go.
Yeah.
But that why question can tell you a lot about why you are or aren't doing it and if you should or shouldn't pursue a change.
Yeah. And it could be that somebody did something really awful as a ministry idea in the past. And so the decision was made like, hey, we're just not going to do that anymore. And so there, so that's where it stands right now. I mean, here's the reality of Halloween. Regardless of your view on whether it's a good or bad or hurtful or helpful thing, in our world today, there is a lot of evil and scary, and we could even attach the phrase rightly. There is a lot of ungodly things attached to that season, that period of time. Over the next week, horror movies and all of that stuff are going to be on the TV a lot more than normal. It could be seen by some, by many in your church, as this day is a celebration of evil and murder and all things grotesque. And so you need to be sensitive to that. The right response, so say you ask the why question and you get that as the answer, like we just believe that this is a celebration of evil. The right response is not for you to push against that and try to change someone's mind on that issue. Specifically, if you're in a meeting with your supervisor and that's just the belief, then you need to go along with it. Even if you believe, well, yeah, but you know, you can make a lot of different, that this isn't the time for that argument. So we don't need to see Halloween as a, I'm going to change someone's idea of this, because I could argue for both sides. It is a good opportunity to be in your community and meet people, and we'll talk about that more in just a minute. But it also is a celebration for some of evil, cultish, grotesque, ungodly things.
Yeah, and then I think there's probably a majority that live in the middle.
For sure.
That just kind of, I don't care either way.
Do they just want a sack of Whoppers?
Yeah.
Some malted milk balls and some lollipops, and they're good.
Yeah, it's a fun night for my kids to dress up, go have a good time. So I think the key there is communication.
Yeah.
On either side of whether you're doing it or not doing it, communicating to your church, and we've talked about this before too, communicating to your leadership first, to making sure that you have that plan, communicating to your leaders next, to your parents next, and then to your students, but making sure that they know, now that you've asked the question why, now they know why. And in doing that, they know all of your intentions.
Yeah.
So it's worth saying, if you're going to do a Halloween event, and I always did, that this is the reason why we're doing it. These are the things that we aren't going to do. This is what we aren't celebrating.
Yeah.
But this is the purpose. This is the outreach value. This is, you know, the family value. All of those things can, you know, ambiguity is always going to bring questions. And anytime somebody's questioning or making assumptions, they're most likely going to assume the most negative possible outcome. So that communication up front can ward that off.
Yeah. And because even if you get the go-ahead from your supervisors and if you've explained the why and all of that, you've explained the why to your students, your volunteers, everybody's on board. In most churches, there are going to be some people, some families who still don't do this. And it's at that moment where your volunteers need to know the why, because they're going to get asked about it, because yep. They're going to be friends. You know, these parents are friends with those parents, and they're going to need to know why. And they're going to ask your pastor, or they're going to ask your minister of education, or they're going to ask you, you know, why are you trying to do this on how they're, you're going to have that. But if you've communicated well up front, like John Paul's been talking about, and you've explained the why, then I think Halloween can be a really, really good opportunity for you to have some community outreach.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Even pull students from a situation that may not be healthy to a situation that is more controlled, that is more safe. You could potentially pull them out of a situation where they could get in trouble somewhere and into a church environment where there's going to be a distinctly different approach to what happens that night.
So what have you done in the past on All Hallows Eve or the season around it?
I like the dressing up. I like the costume contests. I like the candy. We love the candy. In the words of Donald Trump, we love the candy. So we had, sometimes it's been great when it's landed on a Wednesday night. And so it's built in. You don't have to do anything extra. You go on with your normal Wednesday night programming and you say, hey, we're going to have a costume contest. We're going to stay late. We're going to have these games or prizes or whatever. You give out candy. You make sure to present the gospel during your service. That's probably the easiest and one of the most effective ways to utilize the night. This year it's on a Monday, so you can do a Wednesday around that, or it's Sunday night before, or just do it on the evening of. But primarily, that's the thing that I've seen done most, is utilizing that night.
So, and I think there's something that you said that's probably missing from a lot of these, is that you gave the gospel.
Yeah.
And we've talking about a lot of things that we've said before. They're important things to say yet again, that you should give the gospel every opportunity you have with your students. And this really does have potential to be a tremendous outreach opportunity. There are a lot of students that will come as friends of your students in your ministry to a, you know, even if you don't call it a Halloween party, right? You call it some sort of fall festival extravaganza party.
Or boo for Halloween.
Or that.
Because it has two meanings.
Right. So you can get a lot of visitors.
Or boo.
Yeah. I think they've got it.
Yeah.
You can draw a lot of visitors, a lot of first-time guests to an event like that. And so this is important for you in your process of asking the why and the what question, because what good does it do for you to draw, you know, twice as many kids as you normally have for this event and then just give them a box of Whoppers?
Yeah.
You've done nothing for them.
Yep, that's right. There needs to be a system of follow-up and a system of engagement that you and your volunteers have with the people that are there for this night. You don't want to, if you've decided to move forward and have an event like this, you need to make sure and get everything out of it that you can. And we would say that for any event that you do. It's just part of thinking strategically as a leader and as a student pastor that every time you have students gather, there needs to be a purpose. There needs to be a how you get them there. There needs to be what you do while you're with them there. And then what are you going to do afterwards, after they leave? Like, how does this event, even though it's a Halloween event, and even though that this is one day on the calendar and it's a holiday that's kind of unique and weird to some, what are you going to do to link that day with everything else that's going on in your ministry? Like, where does it go to? What's the connection between that Halloween event and something else?
Another thing that you said is what day you might do it on. Sometimes Halloween will fall on Wednesday night and you have Wednesday night programming. Sometimes it'll fall, like this year, on a Monday. So I think part of your strategy question, that why and the what, needs to lean into what day and why would you do it that day? So if you've already got a heap of kids coming on Wednesday nights, but you decide to have that event on the night of Halloween when kids aren't used to being there, chances are a lot of your kids and their friends are going to be somewhere else.
Trick-or-treating.
On that Monday night. Right, instead of coming to your event. So why not have it on Wednesday when you have the built-in audience and you can get a greater crowd there to be able to have a bigger audience to give the gospel to? You know, just things worth thinking through, being strategic and being savvy about how you take advantage of something that you know is already going to be a big deal in the culture that you live in.
Yeah. Okay, so let's play a game together.
I like games.
So I'm going to say a sentence and I want you to finish the sentence in your belief.
Oh boy.
Whoppers malted milk balls are
Ben's favorite candy.
They are. Judgment houses are
lame and cheesy. And sorry if that was offensive to those of you that have already booked one for this Halloween season.
Or like, what if right now somebody has the podcast playing like in their room and they're like hanging black vinyl stuff on the walls, making the maze or whatever.
Yeah. Now's the time to ask the why and the what. This is just my opinion. Don't get mad at me.
Have you ever seen one done well?
No.
Well, there you go.
And that has a lot to do with who was doing it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, it wasn't me. Wasn't me doing it.
So I think the thing, and there are many that do this, and I think the thing that you, like the most common complaint or gripe about the Judgment House is that it's a lot more fear tactic than a clear explanation of the gospel, right? Like that's like, if I was going to say why I would not do one, that's why I would say I wouldn't, because like you're not going to scare somebody to an understanding of the gospel. Now, someone might go through a circumstance that brings about fear in their life that causes them to seek the Lord. I believe that with all my heart.
Yeah.
But I think us trying to, if humanly is a word, humanly engineering a situation of fear, I think is a little suspect.
So I totally agree. And I've heard that criticism of Judgment House is a bunch.
Well, somebody might say, well, what about the old revivalist preachers that, you know, that preached on hell and its fear? And you hear those stories about Jonathan Edwards and people like
sinners in the hands of an angry God,
grasping the pews and chairs white knuckled because they're so afraid.
Yeah. So I think I have two thoughts, maybe more than two, but I'll just say a couple of things. One is that because judgment houses are normally so poorly run, I've never seen, and I've been to three, I guess, when I was growing up. I've never been to one that was actually scary. I mean, it's like you're obviously in a Sunday school room where they just turned off the fluorescent lights and there's, you know, a random scene in there. So to me, they were always more informational than they were actually scary. I mean, they're not trying to make a haunted house.
Right. And so, I would say to that too, because they're the church, there's a certain distance and certain line that they won't cross because of their conviction.
Right.
And that
which
line
is a good thing.
Yeah. And that is a great thing. And often it's that line that makes it less or more scary.
Yeah. So I think there's a balance there. I think it's healthy and right for people to be confronted with the reality of death.
Yes.
Which we don't know. I mean, as far as we're concerned, it is a very soon coming death if we're going to live with this sense of urgency that the scripture calls us to.
Yeah.
So I think that's very healthy to say, hey, this day's coming. Are you ready for it? And that was, you know, you referenced Jonathan Edwards. I mean, that's that. This is coming.
Yeah.
So where are you?
Yeah. And you're right. Death and hell are not preached.
Yeah. So
to a large degree right now.
That is a reality that is scriptural that we have to understand. And every judgment house I've ever been to ends with, this is what Jesus has done to confront that reality and have victory over it.
Yeah.
For you. So I don't really have a problem with them being all of a sudden confronted with the reality of death and like, I got to do something about this.
Yeah.
There's a balance. I've never been totally on board with the fear tactics pushed back on a judgment house. I just think they're stupid.
So just from
I just
like
think they're poorly run. So I would be okay with it if somebody did it well. Like, go hire some professionals to go put it on and really do it up.
Yeah.
And then I might be on board with it.
There you go. I think for me, it comes down to, again, the moment after decision. You know, people make decisions at these things all the time. I mean, every year, churches do them, and every year, people are saved. Biggest question to me is, like, what are you doing with them then? So, like, if it's an organization that does this huge judgment house and churches bring their groups to it, like, I would then, or if a big church puts it on and all these other churches come to it, like, I would then say, so are you gathering all of the information and making sure it gets in the hands of the leader who brought the group that's going to be with them and discipling them for the rest of their time in student ministry? Like, to me, that's the link that is so important. Are you clearly explaining the gospel? And then how are you making sure that we're not just creating frightened spiritual orphans and kicking them out into the world?
Yeah. And in illustrating great magnitude of what Jesus has done for us, are we just painting the picture of a, you know, get out of jail free card for some sort of tragic death that's, you know, barreling your direction?
Yeah.
Or are we making that transition to what God has called us to and what he's saving us from? You're still going to die. So that part's still going to happen.
Yeah.
What matters is what comes after that and how we live up to that point according to who Christ has called us to be and what he's called us to do. And I think that truth can be preached to a certain degree at the event. And then what you said in the follow-up is where that's driven deep into the heart of the believer through a process of discipleship.
Yeah. So if you're in your area right now and you're building the maze,
don't invite me.
and don't necessarily quit either. Just make sure that you have these things happening. So here's the next one. My favorite Halloween memory is... So you would answer for you, though.
Okay. I was going to say, I don't know, Ben.
What is your favorite? Did you trick-or-treat as a kid?
My favorite Halloween memory. I did trick-or-treat as a kid. The problem here with my favorite Halloween memory is that, I can't even say, unfortunately, that it was before I was a Christian, because I became a Christian young. I just didn't pay much attention to what that meant until later on in life.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I should share what truly is the most memorable Halloween experience
I noticed, though, that
I've ever had.
You changed it to most memorable. Yeah. Instead of favorite. And I'm thankful for that.
I almost feel bad about calling it a favorite because it's...
Listen, I'm with you. Was there a particularly scary Halloween that you remember?
Yeah, there was a haunted house that we went to at... what was that place in Birmingham, in downtown Birmingham?
Sloss Furnace.
Sloss Furnace.
Sloss.
Yeah.
I like to say that word.
They ran a pretty good haunted house that was particularly scary to me.
Yeah.
As a young man, I went in all tough and came out like almost on the back of the guy in front of me.
Well, that's a scary place because it's like an old steel factory, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And so it's just scary looking like at 1 p.m. during the day. That when I was a kid in California growing up as an elementary schooler, the high schooler down the street would always wear the full gorilla costume. And for some reason, I thought it was the scariest thing in the world. He would always come to the door of our house every year, and I would always be scared out of my mind of the big gorilla.
That's a good thing to have. We went full gorilla at camp. I would have an intern go full gorilla and just run out of nowhere. That was fantastic.
Just all week at camp.
Yep. You never knew.
I like the phrase going full gorilla.
Me too.
Don't you?
I'm not positive what that means. Other than that you're in the costume, but I feel like you could use it in other ways.
Like if you just like take something on, like you just have a task and you just like get after it.
Yeah, I'm going full gorilla.
I'm going full gorilla on this sermon prep.
I'm using it.
Absolutely.
So here's a question that I'm not going to ask you to fill in the blank. I'm just going to ask you to answer it.
It's okay. It's all right.
The next one, I'll come up with a question. Help you out there. So we've talked about how to use this in a positive way. And so the positive way for the church would be as an outreach tool. I think there are some extremely negative ways to use an event like this as an outreach tool that's only going to work against the stigma that your non-Christian community has, you know, against you. And then there's some ways that we can really pursue the gospel.
Yeah.
Where do you think is the balance?
Yeah. I guess let me phrase it this way. I think one of the best uses of the church, of Halloween by the church, is for the people of the church. The actual church, like the uppercase C Church of God.
Yeah.
To be in their communities on Halloween. Because it is a great moment for you to reach people in your community, to meet people in your community, to meet your neighbor. Listen, in a world where very few people know all the neighbors up and down their street, this is an awesome opportunity for you to meet families. And I think many times we waste those opportunities. So we argued for doing an outreach event. Now I'm going to argue against it on the other side. One of the main reasons why you would not do an outreach event is because you're taking all of the people of the church. You're taking the church out of the community in a moment when the community is happy and out in the streets and walking up and down the neighborhoods, and you're jamming them inside the church building.
Yeah.
So again, like I could argue for both because I believe in the outreach event, but I also believe in the church equipping the church people to live godly lives and be in their communities and talking about Jesus as they go versus just inviting them to an event. I think so many times, and this goes outside of the Halloween deal. I think many times we in the church cripple our people by giving them an easy out when all they have to do is invite someone to an event, when we should be training them to build relationships and share the actual gospel.
Yeah, that's really good.
And so this is that time. Like, this is that moment where the church could really equip its people to be a light in their neighborhood. And so I think we miss that sometimes. I think, so the negative side of that, I think if, like, if all you do on Halloween is you have a bowl of, like, Halloween Jesus tracts and that's what you give out instead of candy, that's not a win for the kingdom.
Yeah.
They're not going to read it. It's just going to make you look like Ned Flanders, the Simpsons' next-door neighbor. And nobody likes Ned Flanders. Nobody wants to have a relationship with Flanders. Everybody makes fun of Flanders. That's not what you're called to be as a Christian. You're called to be in the culture, separated from things that directly go against God's command and laws, yes. But you're still, like, God left us here so that we could tell his amazing story. And his amazing story is best told through relationships. And one of the best times of the year to build relationships is when everyone's knocking on your door.
Yeah. Yeah, so like my neighborhood, I live around a great deal of people who are unashamedly against Christianity. But they're all friends. They're all, hear me well when I say they're all good people, and don't try to overinterpret. They're nice people. They're good neighbors, okay? And so they like to do a lot of things together. They invited us to the Halloween party like they've invited us to a bunch of other things. Well, this is kind of a new territory for us because we're used to the, you know, as the student pastor at Liberty, when I went to a party, no one was drinking, you know, and no one was just going ham at the party.
Yeah.
Because, oh, the pastor's here. Now, they might have shoved it all under the couch until I left. I don't know. I'm not naive.
Maybe.
But we're going to go to this, to the party, because we want to be in community with our neighbors.
Yeah.
Because we want to build enough of a relationship with them that we can speak into them at some point when they find themselves in the right posture to hear. We want to have enough relationship to be a voice that they'll listen to and trust and say, hey, you know, we've been watching you for a year, for 2 years, whatever it takes. And I've come to know that you're somebody that I can trust with what I'm dealing with. So we're going to be there. We're going to be extremely uncomfortable. We've already talked about it, but we're going to go and have fun and participate. And that's exactly what you're talking about, being in community with the people that God has called us to reach, and in prayer the whole time that, God, if you open a door, we're going to talk about you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you in that moment, and I think as you do, as you participate in this evening of candy giveaway in your neighborhoods, people take notice of your personality, of your demeanor, of your decoration or lack thereof, of costume choice, if you choose to go that way, of your generosity. And these are all things, like, you're not going to be drinking at the party. And so that's going to be something that...
No, I will not.
That immediately separates you and says, man, there's something different about this house, or there's something different about this person or this family. But they're still engaged.
Yeah.
They're not separatists. They're not building a giant wall all the way around their house and saying, man, don't bring any of your stuff in here. And I think we as the church, like, this is the moment for generosity and for kindness and to engage people when they come to your door, and to engage parents. Like, sometimes kids will send parents will send their kids up to the door, and, you know, they'll be watching from the driveway. Man, you might want to think this year about setting up a fire pit in your driveway and roasting marshmallows and being out so that when parents bring their kids by, that you're already there on the porch or in the driveway, and you can engage them in conversation. There's a house that's down the street from us. They cook hot dogs every year and give out hot dogs to everybody that comes by just as they go. And everybody remembers that house.
Yeah.
Like everybody knows who they are because of their extreme generosity. And this is a time for God's people to shine, I believe. And many times what we do is we run and hide.
And so as a ministry leader, I think the next step of that is to say, man, I know that this maybe is a place that my people are uncomfortable a little. You know, it's a controversial season. So maybe what they need from you, if you're not having an event on this night, is for you to be able to kind of give them permission as the leader to be the light that God has called them to be.
Yeah.
In even what is a dark season, you know, for the rest of the world around them.
Yeah.
But make the model for them. You know, hey, this is what me and my family are going to do. And this is how we're going to engage our community. And it is not sinful for you to do that.
No.
In fact, it's what God's called you to do. So give them some pointers. Give them something to hang on to, some concrete ideas. Give them some suggestions and charge them to go out. Challenge them to step out of that comfort zone a little bit. I think you'll see a lot of fruit.
Yeah, absolutely. And so however you choose to use Halloween, make sure that you communicate well, that you train and equip your people to be that light that we've been talking about. If you choose to have an outreach event, make sure that you think through it strategically and how and why and when, and then that follow-up process is so important. If you're hanging up the walls, the vinyl black tarp to the Judgment House, I hope it goes well for you. And my favorite candy is Whoppers. What's yours?
I think I'd have to say Reese's right now. Reese's Cups.
Reese's Cups.
Mm-hmm.
This has been episode 44 of the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. Thanks for listening. Head over to iTunes, leave that rating and review. Hit that subscribe button. Look us up on Twitter at Ben Trueblood, at John Paul Basham. We will see you next time.
Ooh.